This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. Do the Lord a service, make your hands willing, your help for better living.
4-H
for community and country.
4-H
respond to food security.
4-H
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H.
Good afternoon, folks. We're here at the Agriculture Show, and this is our 21st show. And today I have such great guests. I'm the luckiest host in the world, and we're going to talk about agriculture in Waterloo region. And we're going to introduce my guests. And first of all, Mr. Sealing, good to see you. Thanks for coming out.
Good to be here, Jeff.
And you had no trouble getting here. Rob, can you, you had a little adventure getting to this spot.
I did, but I'm here.
That's good. This is Mr. Rob Horn, who is commissioner of the planning department. I guess it's a longer title. I should probably...
Oh, that's great.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little about, in our theme on the agriculture show, we'd like to tell our urban listeners all about agriculture. And we're lucky today. The theme is, what does agriculture look like from the municipal perspective? And the region of Waterloo is a modern municipality, as is much in Ontario. And in all of them, with some agriculture, how does that fit in the scheme of things? And if that, we could kind of think along those lines, I think that would probably satisfy our sponsors and also our listeners, I'm hoping. We're always trustworthy in this show that things work out. So what do you think of that, Mr. Sealing? Is that how does agriculture fit in with the Waterloo region here? That we have, I think last census showed like 1,400 farms in the region of Waterloo.
Well, maybe it'd be interesting to talk about where I come from initially in terms of agriculture and why I have an interest in the agricultural community. And I live in Elmira. I was born in Kitchener but raised in Elmira and have continued to live there all my life. But I really come out of a farming background of family. My grandfather, my great-great-great-grandparents sort of came here from Germany, some of them, and there was this Mennonite side, but then there was the German side, and they settled here and then moved up into Bruce County, and my grandfather actually came back as a child about 1907, 1908, and worked in the rubber factory in Elmira, but very shortly after that began to breed chickens in his house, and took a great interest in breeding, and actually he's one of these people that was an early form of a computer. Many people do their breeding and their bloodlines by computer tracking these days. I know the people that don't, they buy paper, but he was a great guy, and everything he seemed to be able to touch was successful. So he began breeding chickens around the time of the First World War, and by the time he got to the 1920s, he established a hatchery and was breeding chickens and selling chickens and chicken stock. And then as time moved on, they had the hatchery, and they had four farms north of Elmira in the Sandhills at that time. They, in addition to the poultry operation, he got into Holstein cattle, and anybody who works in Holsteins will recognize the name Sealing Rockman or of Sealing and the bloodlines that are there that were world famous. And so the semen was still traded up in just in the last decade or so. There are people still... it was still available. So he raised Holsteins, and then he got into Angus on the side. Later in life, he began to breed... Early in life, then later in life, he bred dogs, he bred horses. He was quite into the business of livestock and stock. So I grew up... Well, actually, living in town, my dad ran the hatchery operation. But as a child growing up and as a teenager and during university, we spent lots of time working at the farms. Cleaning out broiler pens, bringing in hay, bringing in straw, harrowing, a whole range of jobs out, picking milkweed paws. We were little kids off the Sandhill farm, so came out of a very strong farm background, and so that sort of colored my experience over the years, and so I really have an appreciation of the farming community.
I can't imagine there are many municipal leaders who can have such a background in agriculture as yourself.
Well, it's rather interesting because it's sort of the best of all worlds. I had an urbanized setting, but also got the experience of working within the agricultural industry. I must say, I was always a Joe boy. I was never in charge of anything. I always did what I was told. Certain things I just couldn't do. I could never back a wagon up. People had to back the wagons up for me, and I was always a little tenuous driving that corn silage wagon past the in-ground pit.
See this thing going over.
That was a little scary, and things like that. But it was a good experience, and got to see farming from all sides.
Yeah.
So, really, in terms of where the region is, the agriculture, I think that a lot of people in our urbanized communities tend to think of this as an urban community, but we also recognize that people often describe this as the 5 or the 10-minute town or city, because no matter where you live, you're 5 or 10 minutes from the countryside.
That's
so people,
true, yeah.
People here get to see the rural areas and know what the rural areas are, and there's a great reliance and dependence on the rural markets and rural produce. Many urban people go to the markets or they go to the gateside produce stands to buy their produce. So I think that there's probably in some ways a stronger relationship between the urban and rural people than there is in many other communities. And that's exhibited, I think, in the mutual interest of preserving the agricultural community. Certainly this region has had, I think, probably the strongest land use protection policies in Ontario, if not in Canada, over the years. And it doesn't come by accident. It comes from, I think, as I was telling one of the Provost Clubs this morning, that the early Mennonite settlers, the Mennonite family traditions had a tradition of stewardship. And you mix that idea of stewardship, and that was stewardship for people, but also for resources. And so there was a desire to protect the lands. And that sort of infiltrated the thinking, I think, when you get into the 1950s and 60s, and people are beginning to look at, say, how are our communities going to grow? Should we be protecting our farmlands? And so I think the result has been is that we don't look like the GTA, for example, where they've basically paved over everything, and development has come at the expense of the farming community and agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Here we've been a lot more restrictive, particularly since 1976 with the first regional plan, but even some of the early planning documents before that placed a great deal of emphasis on there, and strongly supported by the urban politicians, I should say. In fact, sometimes when there's a conflict between loosening up the urban things, urban policy, the rural policy, sometimes it's been the urban politicians who have resisted the most in some cases.
Yeah, I think people also like just the countryside. It's just a pleasure to go out in a non-city environment and see horizon trees, farm fields, that sort of thing. It's not just the growing of the crop, it's the environment.
Yep. Well, I think also, and we may talk about it later, is that there has been in the last few years a congruence between farmland preservation and groundwater protection.
Mm-hmm.
So the best lands tend to be the lands that have the groundwater that we need for this community to continue to thrive and support. So I think that those policy areas sort of mix quite nicely.
I think so too. And I know from the Federation, this is a show sponsored by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. I know when we go, we very proudly say we're from Waterloo Region because of we can point out some very good things that happen here that other parts of the province are just getting a clue of. But we want to make that connection with our urban neighbors. That is we work hand in hand with our municipal politicians, and we try to do what's best for everybody. That the sustainability and of farmers is can you make a living balanced with the sustainability ideals of society, which are varied and broader range. And you can maybe mention some of the things I'm thinking about the Rural Water Quality Program just to give you a bit of a hint. But isn't that not a match for city values or Canadian values are the farmers can help those values.
Well, it's rather interesting that rural water quality program was started up.
Mm-hmm.
The irony of it is that it's there to protect surface water and groundwater, but surface water in particular. And this, in part, was after the cryptosporidium incident in the Grand River back in the early 1990s after the water treatment plant opened up down there. But there's a recognition that we needed to go beyond just looking after trees and so forth. We had to look after the water courses themselves and stop the overgrazing, cattle grazing in the rivers, stop the erosion that was taking place along the streams.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put in place a program which was accessible by the farming community, was actually paid for by the urban community.
Yeah.
Because it was a benefit to them as well, and I think the farming community recognized that it was a joint benefit, and we worked hand in hand together to put that program in place, and I think we've got great results today.
I think we could talk about some other things that's coming up maybe in the future. I'm so lucky in this show. In fact, had Jane Mitchell here from GRCA and also Tracy Ryan, and gave a great description of what that program is like, the history of it, and what they're trying to aim for. There's other things that happens at the municipal level that crosses the radar screen of our elected persons and our fine bureaucrats there who are trying to do those policy goals of council. What do you think the farm community is... what they can look forward to as our region grows, prospers. What do you think people in the city would like to see happening on farms? I don't want to be too vague about it, but what in the future would happen, do you think, as our relationship between city and country expands? Will we see more protection of farmland? Will we see maybe more local food or something, or agritourism?
Well, I'll start, then maybe Rob can jump in here. I'm doing all the talking here.
No, that's okay. We encourage talking on the show, and Rob, please pitch any time you want, of course.
But I think it's always an interesting struggle in an urbanized community such as Southern Ontario, because if communities grow, they grow on what's available in the terms of land. In this region, most of the land that's available for growth is prime farmland or farmland. So I think what we've seen here, though, particularly since 1976, when the regional plan was drawn, at that time they described urban envelopes. These are areas in which the urban community could grow. Mm-hmm. And by the year 2000, we were just starting to approach those in many cases. Certainly the city of Waterloo has basically grown to its limits, particularly now. And what are we going to do? Are we going to continue to sprawl out? And that's basically the pattern of growth that took place. If you drive down to Toronto, one of the reasons you can't drive through there very easily today is that it's a sprawling growth, poor transit, a whole thing, a lot of things happen. It just happened like Topsy. Things just spread out and spread out. Where here, definitive lines were drawn, and so far we're trying to hold to them, and I think we've done that quite successfully. And I think the real test will probably come 10, 20, 30 years down the road when there's pressure to expand those lines, and that's why we're pushing sort of reurbanization, growing inward instead of outward, mm-hmm. to try and preserve those sorts of things. So we see some elements of that conflict right now. For example, as the regional plan's in for approval right now with the province, we're seeing the development industry pushing to see those lines moved out. We're pushing to hold them tight.
Yes.
And those are the kinds of conflicts that take place there. But we're also seeing market changes where people are looking at the kinds of development that are taking place and more of a reurbanization focus. And that's the reason for the LRT proposal, in large mm-hmm. part, was to try and pull the growth inward instead of continuing to have it sprawl out, serviced by roads and cars and automobiles all the time. Your turn.
My turn.
Let's say, you know what we should do, guys? Why don't we play a song here and a little promo, and then we'll introduce Mr. Rob Horn, and we'll talk it, and we'll get his, as Ken says, his turn in on here. All right, we'll play a little tune here, and we'll be back, folks. You listen to the Agriculture Show. We're here on Tuesday on June the 24th today. Is it? I think. And then this is the 21st show, and we'll be right back. And you're listening 25th. To 100, the 25th, and you're listening to 100.3 Sound FM CKMS Radio, your best local community 26th. Radio station. And we'll see you shortly.
It's the 26th.
Dusty old farmer, out working your field, hanging down over your tractor wheel. The sun beating down turned the red paint to orange, rusty old patches of steel. There's no farmer songs on that car radio, just cowboys, truck drivers and pain. Well, this is my way to say thanks for the meal, and I hope there's no shortage of rain. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping a face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. The combines gang up, take most of the bread, things just ain't like they used to be. Though your kids are out after the American dream, and they're working in big factories. If I come by when you're out in the sun, can I wave at you just like a friend? These days when everyone's taking so much, there's somebody giving back in. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, wish you. Thanks for the meal. Here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping the face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal. Here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you.
The International Poly Match is what? 2012 International Plowing Match. Did you know there's more to a plowing match than farmers wearing plaid shirts and overalls riding around on tractors all day? Much, much more. The International Poly Match is a celebration of Canada's agricultural industry, one of the largest outdoor events in the country, with more than 100,000 expected attendees. You're sure to find something for everyone to enjoy. Conveniently located just off the 401, the 2012 event will be held in the heart of Ontario's Technology Triangle. A Poly Match, right in the heart of Blackberry Country. Oh, just a minute, I gotta take this. While it wouldn't be a plowing match without plowing, this family-friendly event takes a step into the past, where you can check out the heritage of farming in Ontario, from horse-drawn buggies to steam-powered engines. In between the all-day machinery shows, every woman's dream, take the kids to experience the thrill of the rodeo and cheer on the amazing dancing tractors. Grab your partner for a dance as you watch the top local talent on the entertainment stages. Other thrills include an on-site traditional barn raising and wagon rides all around the grounds. And if wagons aren't thrilling enough, take a ride in a helicopter to get a bird's eye view of the event. And with over 600 exhibitors and vendors, including plenty of good food, great beer, fashion shows, and artists and crafts, this isn't your typical agricultural fair. Our sponsors generously support the IPM as well as local charities and the agricultural industry. But you can make a difference too. If you want to help make the 99th International Plowing Match extra special, come out and volunteer. The Plowing Match wouldn't be the success it is without the hard work of our volunteers. If you are a group or an individual looking to get involved, check out our website. We won't have you mucking out the barns, we promise. Visit ipm2012.ca or like us on Facebook to learn more. I'm Courtney Connors, the 2012 Ontario Queen of the Furrow.
I'm Ray Dedman from Roseville. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
So we're back, folks, and it's a lovely Tuesday afternoon, and this is your host, Jeff Steger, with me, my great guests and all, Mr. Ken Sinley, Regional Chair, Mr. Rob Horn, with the Commissioner of Planning. So before we play those, how'd you like our little plowing match ad there? That was kind of fun.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be a really big shoe, and we're really promoting the plowing match here on our little show, and we'll have so many people in next week. Probably we're going to talk to Rob next, but anything with the plowing match you would like to pass along to our urban neighbors, come out to the show, learn about agriculture?
Well, I think there's an opportunity for people to get out and see what's at the plowing match. I think there's an opportunity for people to volunteer and become involved too. I just noticed all of the hundreds of volunteers are involved in the LPGA this weekend, and hopefully the plowing match will attract volunteers in the same way.
That's well said. In fact, they're still looking for volunteers. And, you know, volunteers, you're not just doing it for nothing. Profits from the match, for lack of a better word, what they make, are going to be distributed to the two community foundations and the three hospitals. So everybody's going to visit a hospital one way or the other in their lifetime. So if folks come out and volunteer, your effort will help bring more funds to the three hospitals and to the community foundations. So. Hooray for the plowing match. Woo-hoo! Rob, how you doing?
Good, thanks, Jeff.
we're going to get talking to you here a bit more about, I can't remember what the last topic of conversation was, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure.
Are you a Hamilton boy?
I'm an Oshawa boy.
Oshawa boy.
So I've been here about 32 years, which makes me the newcomer in this room, I think. And I've seen this area just grow in amazing ways, but you know the common thread has been we keep our rural character and identity, and we have an urban identity, and there's a whole lot of respect that goes across that. So I've lived in three cities, two townships. I live in Wellesley Township now.
Oh, good.
So
Perfect.
So you know, it helps me get into the fabric of the community. I'm responsible on council's behalf for all the township libraries. And what is a library more than a library? When it's in a township.
Yeah.
It certainly does a lot of things for a lot of people. It's a big touchstone. But had a family farm as well near in Clarington Township, so that's toward Orno Bowmanville.
Oh yeah, okay.
So
the Oshawa, yeah.
So yeah, come by some agricultural experience, honestly, from my parents' direction, shall we say, Jeff.
So it's pretty cool that you've got you've also had some farm background like that. There's less and less people nowadays can have a connection with the farm, even like back to grandparents now.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely,
you can bring your talents and skills to Worley Region for. In regards, you do have an awareness of beyond just what you read in a book about agriculture.
Yep. And a lot of my neighbors are retired farmers moving into town, and the big joke in town is the three-car garage is usually the retired farmers, because you got to have one for your implements, right?
Yeah, and all the other little toys you're used to, maybe your old restored tractor.
Exactly. So you know, Jeff, you were talking a lot about awareness and education. You know, I don't know how many people know that this region has about 225,000 acres of agricultural land. You know, there's over 3,000 farming employees, you know, and the agricultural land itself is about 60% of our total land area. Yeah, I think the gross farm receipts last year were somewhere around $500 million.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole lot going on
in
this region in terms of the economy as well. So, you know, I think a lot of what we have to do is get the word out and get people to understand how vibrant and prosperous the community is, but also what challenges that farmers face every day.
Yeah, so that people in town and our listeners can know that it's not as simple as, well, it's an open field, the guy will just farm. He has all kinds of stuff that he has to decide, and factors that influence him. Land prices, of course, are a big one in our area, but even just whether... what kind of restrictions he has to do what that farm person wants to do, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and so. Ken was really, you know, really hit the point well about you got to look at it from the outside in and the inside out. You know, let's keep our urban boundaries as firm as we can. If you go back to 1973 and look at today, you know, the urban boundaries for development haven't changed a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But we added 280,000 people in the meantime. And in the next 20 years, we look to add another 180,000. So, you know, there's that compactness and that respecting. I mean, Ken spoke well about, you know, rich farmland, and we get 80% of our water out of the ground. And that makes us the biggest water-dependent community in Ontario, one of the biggest in Canada. So it's a fine balance, but as Ken said too, it's so rich that you can be 5 minutes and into the countryside.
Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned about the increasing density in the cities and that sort of thing, and that's good. And you know, we went from when the Planning Act said you shall have regard to, what was the other one? Shall be consistent with.
Yeah.
And now, for the first time in the last 10, 50 years, there's actually guidelines that you will have this much growth within a boundary and so
exactly,
on.
Exactly, and higher densities as well.
Can you ever see a time like when there'll be more of an emphasis on, like, we're preserving farmland by reverse because we restrict, what we want to accomplish urban-wise. Is there any idea where you think we just preserve farmland for the sake of farmland, for environment, for species have protection?
Yeah, I think we've started it. I don't think we're there yet in terms of understanding some of the commodities that the countryside has to offer that are not the traditional commodities.
Well, that's the interest. That's the ecological goods and services.
Yeah.
Like, how do you value? You can value clean water, which you do, but how do you value clean air or the fact that there's species out there?
Yep, and I think we've only begun. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's a few flavors out there. Like the buy local, buy fresh was sort of a good intro into more of the green tourism, mm-hmm. you know, and I think there are strong ties. But, yeah, you're right. There's many more commodities to a farm than simply crop and livestock.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's why, you know, over time we'll probably see a bit more, I don't know what they even look like. Golly, will it be parkland or just preserves? What is the land trust business doing? You know, I think there was some land trust set up to preserve farmland. They're small.
There have been. In other areas, there have been more the sort of the carbon commodity notion. And it really hasn't gained a sort of a footing yet.
Yeah.
But the region has created some good working relationships with people who want their legacy to be a trusteeship. So, for example, you know, they've got a wonderful woodlot. It's been in the family multiple generations. They want it saved in perpetuity. So we're helping them set up trusts. You know, that's sort of a part of it. But, mm-hmm. You know, the other big piece of the puzzle is we have things called environmentally sensitive landscapes, so
right.
systems. And it's not just above the ground and endangered species, but it's the groundwater. And our region has about 35,000 hectares of environmentally sensitive landscapes. That's huge,
yeah.
huge amount. So, you know, what value do you place on that? It's pretty tough to do, but I think it's telling and it proves your point that there's a whole lot more.
Well, that's it, and I know, boy, everyone sure does remember in the Northern region when you had a chance to go for a drive at night in the sunset and see a lovely river valley or a huge expanse of forest, so we just want our urban people to know that, you know what, there's definite things that have to happen that
yep.
make that be there, and we talked a little about agritourism and I think with local food. Agritourism is also heritage sites too. I think like there's a ton of those non-monetized values out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know what, you know, like names like Hurley Fenning,
yeah.
Martin Steger, Reeser,
yeah, yeah.
You know, they're Stoll,
yeah.
right? They're pretty well known across the region and we cross sort of into the countryside a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of organic farms is quite interesting as well on the rise. I mean, Fenning's is a great example. And I enjoy their stuff as well. But I think there seems to be a rise on that type of thing as well. But much bigger picture is the whole notion of imported food and our dependence
yeah.
on imported food. And I know it's a huge discussion point. But I think the more you can get people out in the countryside and starting to understand and process, you know, I think the better. And I do think the plowing match is a huge educational opportunity, especially for kids.
Especially because I have people visit my farm, boy, the kids just light up just the idea that, oh, big old barn and there's livestock. It's like their response is so fresh and
absolutely,
yeah. So there's lots to offer that way on the farm, and you know, hopefully, that certainly is a nice niche market for a lot of farm operators. You know, our membership of the Federation, we say I think about 10% of our members would be involved in the local food market, mm-hmm. local food, which people identify
yep.
with, but 90% are more in the bulk commodities. And so that's the stuff that's really hard to, it's controversial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
We support all agriculture. Our job here is the survivability of farm families, that they can make a living and take their kids to school and go for a soda at night too.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, like, you just can't create boundaries between urban and rural. So
yeah.
the rapid transit debate, Jeff, I saw you and saw Mark, and I think people initially thought, what's a farm community care?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they here? What's that all about? And it was made very clear that, you know, managing growth and containing growth protects farmland, and we all win from that.
Yes.
And I think it was very much a testament to what we're about, is that we see to the horizon, we see the bigger picture.
Yeah. Well, a good, and of course, the regional policy plan is it's a 5-year. They're good for 5 years, and you have to start over again and review them. And we're in the final stages, as Ken mentioned, that there were some appeals to the last our full official policy plan.
Yep.
But there's changes in that. To what would our urban persons like to know about? You know, what is in the official plan as far in regards to agriculture? Like, there's ideas around the protected countryside,
sure.
I think, and a hard edge idea. What are we trying to accomplish by doing that?
So an official plan is a legal document.
Yes.
And it basically confers development rights and other types of rights on different properties, and it gets into mapping, and it has text, and it lays the general framework for the next 20 years, and the province requires us to have one. So as you say as well, every 5 years you have to review the plan to make sure it's current. And I like that. That makes sense to me.
Yep.
We're all on the same page and the public has that opportunity for input. But, you know, in many ways, what it does is it establishes the countryside. It establishes the urban areas. It establishes where growth is going to occur. And even if you look out toward Trussler Road and you see the subdivisions coming toward Trussler, most of that land has been planned for development for decades.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people don't always cobble onto. And I get it, because all they see is not the approvals process. They see the houses. And as they approach, I think they're, you know, the amount of time that it takes for actually the market to absorb and for development to move outward is decades long. And some of that land has been designated for 20, 30 years and is seeing development now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a legal document. It does confer some basic rights onto farmers. And I would suggest from the perspective of farmers, it's more a document that establishes where farming will operate, and that farming will operate fairly autonomously. You compare that to the urban areas where you've got, you know, you have to have certain densities of development, you just have to have certain development types, and the servicing will occur this way. So it's much more detailed in the urban areas.
Yeah. We just did the census here, and we'll give another few minutes here. So the latest census, and Lucille Bish from your department came out a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about the census. Anything you see in the census data that our urban listeners might be interested in hearing about?
Yeah, a couple of things. So I mentioned a few of the statistics, and, you know, it's really good for us as well to take stock. The census is a little bit tough to read sometimes because it often excludes Wellesley and Wilmot Township because they're not within what's called our census metropolitan area, so we always have to do a little bit of statistical gymnastics to get there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Average farm size, about 160 acres. The provincial average is about 243.
Yeah.
The national average, 778. I got to think that's the Big Prairie.
Yeah.
That would probably skew those numbers.
Yeah. There's tons of theories on it. But we have small farms here. They're not typical of our area, but not typical of modern agriculture in a sense. Large operations.
I was interested, and maybe you can help me out, Jeff or Ken. The farm operators, the average age is 48, and it's 54 provincially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is quite amazing, because everywhere else it switches. I heard something the other way around it. So modern farms might have like one landowner listed and is probably the eldest member of the family.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, there could be several younger people. So the actual true average age of the operator in that farm is lower than what it says on the census data.
Okay.
Now, I don't think that methodology was used in that one, so I'm not too sure how that came about doing that. But
okay. That's
certainly for people to figure out beyond my expertise in pay scale, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, it also says probably that there are more more younger people seeing a future in farming in this community, too.
Yeah.
They're staying in it, particularly if it's a family situation or they're moving out and buying another operation. But obviously younger people are staying in farming more so than in other communities.
Yeah, it seems like, and you know, Kelly, I know some young farmers, and they're the most amazing persons because they actually started from on their own without a family connection. Now that is a huge feat,
mm-hmm.
and that's impressive because the number of farmers continues to drop. So I guess eventually you have to get younger because the older guys like me just quit doing things, I guess. So,
just one of the other stats, Jeff, that's interesting is that Stats Canada has something called a headquarters rule, and I think you've talked about this before. So about 1,400 farms headquartered in the region. So wherever the head office is, that's the area that counts. So we may have more than 1,400 farms, but it's just how they aggregate the data. Apparently, we've had a lower loss of what you call headquarter farms than the national and provincial rates. And I think that speaks a little bit to our stability as well.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, so many factors weigh in, but I do think that that municipal government's aggressive stance against carving up farms
mm-hmm.
has really shaped the landscape.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's, boy, that makes you think. There's so many things that happened over the last few years, you know, like a modern chicken farm can be on like a very small acreage, but a modern, there are no place in the Worley region where you could site a modern crop farm because the thousands of acres involved is hard. You can't agglomerate a really typical cash crop farm in the area.
But I think sort of looking back to 2011, 2006, 2001, mm-hmm. the previous, we're pretty stable.
We are remarkably stable compared to everyone else, I think.
Yeah. I think the thing that's beyond our control, of course, is commodities pricing and the challenges that come with that. Mm-hmm. Just incredible. And the stress that comes with that, too.
Yeah. Well, that's, I guess everyone has their own different kind of stress. Ours is, you've got to be somewhat philosophical about it from a farm point. It's clearly no one can control the weather. So, you know, you have to have a certain kind of reflection on, I think, for farmers that there's this all biological stuff and it's not the same as, you know, retooling the line or something. There are things beyond your control and you try your best, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Yeah. I like a couple of the adjustments, you know, direct marketing mm-hmm. by farmers. I think that has been just a real plus. I think getting into niches like the organic farming, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of resonance in the urban areas.
Yeah, there's problems there too, though, of course. And, you know, I remember reading somewhere that only 20% of the consumers have the presence of mind or financial means to buy a brand. Mm-hmm. Most of us have to prudently and budget-wise buy at a price. So, you know, it's like I say, only 10% of our members actually would be in the local food business, and the rest are at bulk commodities and we love them all because they're all making a living, but it would be nice to be able to, I don't know, what sort of things would the farm people have to do to get the public's interest more in the bread, the full breadth of farming? It's not just local food.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of it goes out to education as well. Mm. But, you know, the other thing that I think you've made advances on as a community is into the major grocery stores. Finding a spot at least on the shelves and a prominent spot for Ontario produce. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a considerable amount of pressure in the past couple of years, you know, talking about the 100-mile diet and all kinds of things. And I think that, you know, that the grocery industry felt compelled to show it was responsive and caring. And I do think you did make some inroads that way.
Yes, we did. Yeah, well, it worked out really well. We'd have a great, we're lucky for our local farmers who are in local food, they're getting lots of support. And I know it's ongoing as the 5-year regional plan is, so there's always a review on how much effort there should be on local food too, but that's ongoing. So.
Yeah. And if energy prices increase and cost to, you know, bring things in from places like California, I think that could be a leveler.
Yeah, oh boy, I suppose you read this, the prognosis for all kinds of scenarios in the future, and that certainly is one of them, is our dependence on oil is influences everything we do.
Sure. Well, the little indicators, you know, like the dollar stores are the dollar store in a bit now.
Yeah.
Because the transportation costs are that much higher.
Dollar stores in a bit.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that title somewhere.
Dollarish.
Dollarish. Oh, I love it. Yeah, I tell you, I think you guys just to keep up to date on all this kind of stuff. It's super. So let's take a little break here and do a little wrap up. We'll play one more song, and maybe after this is over, if you guys would like to take turns reading that little promo there, we'll do that, and then we'll spend our last bit of our show today talking a little bit about some wrap up stuff and other good stories. So you're at 100.3 Sound FM. It's your host Jeff Steger, and this is the Agriculture Show, and we're coming to you here on a Tuesday afternoon, and this is episode 21. We're gonna play a tune right back.
Out on the plains, down near Santa Fe, I met a cowboy riding the range one day. And as he jogged along, I heard him singing a most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. A come-a-ti-yi-yi-yay, come-a-ti-yip-ti-yi-yay, get along. Doggies, get along. Better be on your way. Get along. Get hip, little doggies. And he trucked them on down the old fairway, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. he's got a knocked-out Western accent with a Harlem touch. He was raised on local weed. He's what you call a swing half-breed, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come to yi-yi-yay, come to yip-titty-yay.
Hi, Gord Grant, Ontario Federation of Agriculture Rep for Waterloo, Wellington, and Dufferin, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS 100.3 FM, or maybe you're streaming it at www.soundfm.ca, or perhaps you're enjoying it on channel 946 Rogers Digital Cable. So, Jeff, just wanted to bring something up today. You know, often your audience might often consider agriculture to be at odds with nature. It's not an uncommon public perception. But I think it's important that your listeners know that within the Grand River watershed anyway, we have a remarkable program, the Rural Water Quality Program, that works very closely with farmers. And in the decade that, or more, that this program's been in effect, there's been an awful lot done. A lot of miles of streams fenced to prevent livestock from getting in and punching down the banks. A lot of fragile land taken out. It creates a lot of habitats. So, and that's not uncommon across to Ontario, rural Ontario. And it was made very obvious to me this week when one of our other staffers in another part down towards the southwest did a recording of the eastern gray tree frog that's keeping her young family up at night because they've decided to hit a tree right next to their farmhouse. So today I thought I'd give you, Jeff, the relaxation component of the agriculture show. So if your listeners want to get comfortable, put their feet up, breathe in deeply, exhale, breathe in deeply, and exhale. And for the next minute, just enjoy the sounds of the eastern gray tree frog with a little bit of soothing background music, courtesy of DanoSongs.com.
I'm in.
We're in.
I'll be there.
We'll be there.
The International Plowing Match is coming to our own backyard, and we need volunteers. Hundreds of people have already signed up to help at ipm2012.ca. However, we need thousands to make this event another Waterloo Region success. There are opportunities for everyone. Come get a little rural this September, whether it's one day or five. We need your help.
Are you in?
Well, that's a big shout out for our friends at the International Plowing Match, and they're looking for volunteers. And come on out, folks! You're going to help. You're going to have a great time yourself, and you're going to help out some fine local institutions, three hospitals, and the two community foundations as they work towards as they do their thing. Well, we're in the last 20 or 30 minutes of our show, and I just want to, before I get too long, just thank my guest here for being. And we're just going to do a roundup. It's Mr. Ken Seely and Mr. Rob Horn from the Region of Waterloo. Ken, you're welcome to anything come to mind while you're listening here. I know we've kind of talked a little bit in the off the air about the unique nature of our farming here in Waterloo Region with smaller farms and why that is. We have an identifiable group that has a type of farming that's consistent with people's vision of what farming is. It's a small family farm, but
We talked about farm size, and one of the things that's interesting in this community is because of the presence of the Mennonite community who maintain family and mixed-use farming. They tend to run smaller operations, particularly if they're old order and they're using horses for equipment, for harvesting, or for plowing. And it really is part of the tourist attraction here is to be able to go out the back roads and see that kind of farming operation going on. It's like a trip to the past.
Yeah.
And it's a lifestyle that... We often say you can go from horse and buggy to rim in the span of about 5 or 6 kilometers, but I think we're seeing some elements of change in some of those operations. They're still very much committed to the family style farm operation, a small mixed farm operation, but you're seeing them sort of stretch out a little bit more these days. For example, you'll see. Beginning to see more and more greenhouse operations, for example, on some of these farms. And so if you were to go north of Elmira, you could buy year-round tomatoes at Floralhome up there. And I've seen a number of other of those farms where greenhouse operations are beginning to grow up and take place. And so it's just not gateside sales. At one time, it used to be brown eggs and summer sausage, which you could buy at the rivers at the gateside. Well, now it's... In season, it's all sorts of vegetables. It's maple syrup in the spring, vegetables, flowers, flowering pots, year-round tomatoes. So they're looking. Some of them are looking to expand their operations as well. Now there's differences within the community, and depending on their religious persuasion and background and the degree of conservatism, they'll take on different things. But we are seeing some changes out there that are changing a little bit of the rural landscape out there. It's is a little bit surprising. You're driving along and what used to be an old order farm with no electricity going into it suddenly sprouts a great big greenhouse and or a roadside stand. So that is a bit of a change that's going on out there. But the farm sizes are constrained somewhat, and the average farm size is because of the nature of the land around here, for example, and the way it was originally developed, and secondly, by the nature of the farming operations that are on there. So I think people... have the ability here, I think, more so than in more urbanized communities farther away, like in the GTA, of actually doing farm gate sales and getting much more, many more options in terms of food supplies as well there.
Yeah.
And you're seeing them actually catering to the market. You see you see free-range chickens, which is the big thing now for some people, and you'll see drug-free meats and a whole range of new product lines, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Appearing at these... at these farm gate sales along the way.
You know, we have a good connection to emphasize urban and rural. Like we had on the show that we had people from the Murray Bink from the Waterloo Hen Association, and they really enjoy having those backyard flocks. I know there's some discussion about whether or not they should be there, but he can tell you great stories about not only the pleasure of having the eggs and so on, but it's just the cycle of life that the chickens show in terms of great learning experience. How would you get that if you didn't have livestock around or had a garden or something?
And if people traveling north of Elmira will see the auction barns up there now. The community has got pulled together to create a farm auction center up there. And so they're selling produce just not to roadside people, they're selling produce to retailers. So, for example, when we were at the cottage in River Lake here, we go down to Goderich Saturday mornings to the market there, we find vendors who are actually selling produce produced down here in Waterloo Region that they bought at the Woolwich sales barns.
Yeah.
And so that produce is moving all around the province through the vehicle of that sales, which the community itself pulled together to create that auction setting, which allowed them then a marketplace for the produce on a larger scale, because farm gate sales are really quite small when it comes right down to it. But if you can produce greater quantities and greater volumes and then sell them through the auction process to other retailers or other wholesalers, then there's a bigger opportunity to expand the incomes at that time. So that's another change that's taken place more recently that I think to reflect the needs, I think, particularly of the Mennonite community and non-Mennonites as well, to broaden their ability to do greater sales and increase their income through the farm.
Yeah, and in the way that people get to, it's so pleasant. It's a nice boutique type style of selling, and for people that frame of mind, that's great. It's good fun.
Well, you wonder too, Jeff, because you know we're about 550,000 people now.
Yeah.
So we're going to go, we figure, beyond 700,000 in 20 years. And I think we're sitting at about 730 is our best estimate. So, you know, it does beg the question of market. So when we say food terminal, we probably automatically think of the Toronto Docks.
Yeah, that's a big facility.
And perhaps, as Ken says, this is the genesis of something new and different and bigger for us. And I think that might bode well as well in terms of the directness of market for farmers. I did want to sort of go back to one other point, and that we were talking about farm size.
Yes.
I have a daughter in Switzerland right now, and she's living in a very rural area outside Zurich called Dusnow. She's living with a family, and they have four kids, and each kid has a farm. No farm is more than 20 acres. Most of them are 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making a living, but interesting that they can make a go of it. They are dairy. All four of those farms are dairy. And what's really fun for me, though, is that she can milk a cow. She can drive a tractor, and, you know, she's really connected. And every Sunday, she's out at one of those four farms, helping out, doing a number of things. But I think as well, it goes back for me to my experiences when I go to the Royal or I'll go to the Sportsman Show in Toronto. I'll watch the kids. That's, to me, that's the keystone to all this, is how we connect our kids. And it's the old saw, but it's really true. My kids taught me how to recycle. My kids taught me how to use non-caustic cleaners, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all from the kids. But it is a little telling when you're in Toronto, when you see kids actually learning to, you know, understand, where does my food come from? It's fascinating. It's probably second nature to us, but it's fascinating to me that we have a disconnect that we have to overcome.
Yeah, so that's interesting to mention, because like, as a farmer, it is somewhat of a surprise or shock to read in the paper issues about agriculture, and you think, where'd that stuff come from? Like, how would our urban listeners find out more about agriculture in the Waterloo region? If they went to the regional website or something, how would they find out more about, you know, you can find out in the region with employment lands and so on, but how would, you know, I gotta say the facts, but of course facts, it depends where you come from.
It does.
How would a person through the regional, I guess you go to the library and get a book?
Well, yeah, but you know, I was talking to one of my colleagues in Sudbury, and I was talking about public accessing the public, and I said, what's your strongest tool right now? You know what he said?
Facebook.
So, you know, it does beg the question, are we using the media that we should be?
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are busy too, and they don't tend to come out unless there's something in it for them. So, for example, going to Martin's or going somewhere to have that experience, or St. Jacob's Market. That's another place to go to the market in St. Jacob's or go in Galt. And it's really interesting to overhear people where they're from or just have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
They're coming for the experience, but they're buying too.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's funny, you mentioned about Switzerland, and boy, we look overseas to some of those jurisdictions. England's probably the one that comes to mind first. And you look at the how they support the agriculture industry, it's amazing how, you know, we support ours and one pillar, which is price mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
But over there, they have identified parts, and I'm not getting them all right, but one is, you know, on price, but also on historical significance and archaeological effect.
And you know, food is not cheap like it is in Canada. Especially. It's expensive. So I was there for a couple of weeks in April.
They take, like, very positive direct steps to preserve the landscape, not just the food production.
Yeah, and I think they come closer to the, you know, full cost accounting. So yeah. A small basket of strawberries was about $8 Canadian.
Yeah, wow.
So it's a little more real. Conversely, cheese was cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Very cheap. So so it's almost as like they've got appropriately priced pricing, but it's building in, I think, more of the reality.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole rub about agriculture, I suppose, and then maybe pass on to our urban listeners that you have to know how they how those guys make a living on the case of your daughter's the 10 and 20 acre farms. What kind of mechanisms are in place to support that thing, and do we will we be doing that kind of thing in the world? Like, it won't be just a world region by itself, but in Ontario, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to talk a bit about monetizing those values, and we're kind of segued into that a little bit.
Yeah, and this is a little different model, too, but I remember my daughter coming back from a dairy farm, and the farmer made cheese as well, so she had to get up at 3:30 to start the process, and I think they were done by noon, but that was part of it, you know,
right.
A little different model, but actually made the cheese and did some direct sales.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in terms of monetizing, you know, what else is there to a farm? You know, well, there's the simple creation of oxygen from the green areas. There's the moderating influences of trees.
Yeah.
There's the retention of groundwater. There's areas that are major, major recharge
habitats, like endangered species. All
Absolutely.
Those legislations come down and express valuable and important the common wishes of most people in Ontario.
That's right.
But they don't come along with those come at a cost.
Correct.
And yeah. And that hasn't. It's hard to see. How will we resolve that? How will we resolve that the things that people want to happen in the countryside and farmers with the financial?
I think we're only beginning to understand it.
Okay.
I think when we get in, we've gotten into things like carbon credits, but I think for most people, it's very vague what it is and how it works and why would I buy them and what is my return on that carbon credit. So to me, it's a very vague notion. The other issue is if you're working in hard currency, how do you afford it and how do you ascribe a price to it? So my take is we need to start the conversation in a much more tangible way.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about, so what does your land do?
Yeah.
Make those connections. And for us, to me, it goes back to that 80% of our water is coming out of the ground.
Yeah, that and may be the thing that makes us unique in the world of the region is that's how we will express those new values in terms of water.
Yep.
It makes sense to people, too, because we can figure out what the cost to build a pipe or some darn thing, but until we can say that, we can spend that much money keeping our own water clean.
Yeah, but a farm is so much more than, you know, more than the crop.
Yeah.
But I think it's a conversation around what it is exactly that we have and what contribution does it make.
Yeah, it's a fun topic. I think that's where the future is laying on this.
Well, North Americans have traditionally run on cheap food policies, you know, so that enters into the debate as to what they're prepared to pay for in terms of food pricing. So you talk about Europe. Europe pays the proportion of income to pay for food in European households much higher than it is here in Canada and the United States. And now with the talk about Pacific free trade and all,
mm-hmm.
opening
yep.
up the marketing boards and that sort of thing, that's a topic for another day. But there are all sorts of issues of pricing that during the last federal elections when there was talk about carbon pricing and carbon trade-offs, so you know what happened when it was put to the public. And so it's a very difficult topic, a very difficult topic area. So,
but it's funny how it goes because, like, you see in the paper every day, like, you know, Tim Hortons is going to do this kind of green and only food produced in certain types of situations and so on. Well, I kind of think, you know what, for instance, maybe the Tim Hortons and Kitchener-Waterloo and Rotary Region say, well, you know, we prefer to have a hogs from our thing from our local thing to further fine-tune it to support our local farmers. I would think this would be a reasonable extension of those values that we hold dear in Waterloo Region. We ought to have them somehow.
I do think those societies starting to get it.
I think so, too.
But it seems to happen sometimes when not good things happen. For example, an E. coli scare in California lettuce, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're aware, we're dialed in, and all of a sudden, the media starts covering how much lettuce comes from California to our stores, or the apples this year, right? And the fact that I guess we're going to see a lot more BC produce.
Yeah, that's right.
At a lot higher prices. I think it begins to register, but I would agree with Ken. We're still on in a sort of a cheap food society, and it's I think it's artificial.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, it was important in its time. The economy was growing, and we had to get bigger, and that's how we distributed the wealth and the growth of society, but depending on how you feel about those various studies on limits of growth, suggest that we got to change that a little bit. It's not, the resources are not unlimited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing we haven't talked about is water use as well by farmers, and some of the strides that have been taken, very, very positive. And also the fact that, you know what, water's cheap in Canada.
Yeah.
Very, very cheap. And I think, again, there's some awareness that needs to come to that. So, Jeff, to your point about what about all the other commodities on farms, like groundwater recharge? Point well taken.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, boy, it's really neat that we can talk about that here. It makes sense to us here living in the Warley region because we as you know, you got to monitor what the wells are pumping into the cities and where it's coming from and make sure this well is clean and so on. It makes sense to people. The water's going to come from somewhere. And of course, it's controversial, but along the same lines is the runoff water management plans, where that to just can't have all that rainwater run down the ditch to the lake that quick. It's better to have settling ponds and stuff like that, I think.
Right, and we have things called storm scepters.
Yeah.
So they'll separate the oil out in parking lots, for example, before it's coming in.
So I guess the farmland sort of does that too, in a way, doesn't it? It's a filter.
Absolutely.
So if it's valuable to collect money, then and appropriate those financial devices to get the money to do stormwater management, it might be sort of fits in with trying to monetizing. Oh, we're just having a great time doing all kinds of stuff. Here. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, I tell you what, folks. You know what? I think we're probably gonna call her a day here. I just want to thank so much. It's already at 3:20 today, and you want to do me a favor?
Wants to read?
Please.
Okay. I'm going to read, and then I'm going to head off.
Okay.
This is Ken Sealing from the region of Waterloo. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having
us on. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And I'll say hello to Robin a bit here, and just let me shake your hand, and thanks for coming out, and hope you listen to our show online there. So, see you later. So. Oh, that's good. He's a busy man, isn't he?
He's a busy man.
We're at the end of our show here, Rob. So I guess did anything else we want to cover here? I think we covered a lot of stuff. And of course, as in most discussions, there's no end to what you can talk about further.
Absolutely, yeah. And Jeff, I think we truly do value our farmland.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly think that we all need to understand
it. We just don't know how to say it yet.
Yeah, we need to understand it a little bit better. I think the prospects for maintaining a vital agricultural base is really good. But I think we do have to look at it from the perspective of controlling development and allowing the farm community to do what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the good thing about the farm community is, we're the expert at what we do, and we can do anything the consumer wants. You name it, we can do it. We have the technical skills and the training professionalism to do that. It is the question of how you got to make a living at it. So, I think if I had a message from the city or the country people, is that, whatever you want, we'll do it. That's the easy part.
And let's keep focusing on our kids. And I have to tell you, it's a very rich life to have living in a rural area.
Yeah. And I'm glad to hear your story about Oshawa. I don't know why I thought it was Hamilton. You worked in Hamilton for a bit, right?
No, but I was a little bit down that way briefly. But yeah, most of the time I've been here.
Okay. So, well, folks, we just zoomed right along here. It's about 3:20. I guess we'll wrap up the show today, and I'll go back and see if I can archive this show, and I'll just thank my remaining guest, Rob Horn, the Commissioner of Planning for the Region of Waterloo, so much for coming out today.
Thank you, Jeff.
And look forward to having yourself or some other persons from the region come out, and we'll talk some more about how what the agricultural scene, how it connects with our urban scene.
Anytime.
Perfect. Okay. Oh. Do me a favor. Can you read that for me, please?
You want me to read that?
You're going to be the best.
I'd be happy to read it.
Okay.
Hi, this is Rob Horn from the region of Waterloo. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thank you so much, and thanks for being part of our 21st show here on the Agriculture Show on your best and local community radio station, CKMS Radio, soundfm.ca. And we'll talk to you next week, and we'll talk some more about Ply Match. All right, next week, have a great week, and think rain.